pumpkin face, pumpkin face. So many shapes all over the place. It's Halloween.
Okay, another classic. Thank you, Jeff. You know, nothing welcomes trick-or-treaters like a grinning pumpkin or maybe a scowling one on your front stoop. We're going to be talking about how to create some amazing ones. I'm Jill Nadeau on WPR News, and our guest right now is Carly Ide. She's an illustrator, a pumpkin and tattoo artist based out of Appleton. Stay with us because at noon, we're going to talk about the science of learning a new language. But first, tell us about your efforts at pumpkin carving. What questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Carly, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Okay, I think we got rid of that echo. Is that better?
I hope so.
Okay, I think we're good. Okay, that was me. We had to do this in a rush, so sorry about that, everyone. It sounded kind of spooky, kind of like Halloween, right?
Oh, yeah. It was set up like that. It was totally intentional.
It was totally intentional. Thank you. So what do you love about pumpkin carving? What a really cool niche artistic thing to do.
Well, the beauty of Halloween is it's such a special time, and it only happens once a year. So I've always been pretty artistic, doing lots of different things in the community and kind of different artistic experiences. And it's just an amazing experience to kind of submerse yourself in the Halloween culture and to keep creating and to work with such an interesting medium.
Yeah, they don't teach pumpkin carving in art school, do they?
No.
So I had mentioned earlier, you were a contestant on season 3 of Outrageous Pumpkins on the Food Network. For those who aren't familiar with it, what's the show all about?
So the show is, on Food Network, and it's just a big contest, kind of reality contest show where they bring a bunch of extremely talented pumpkin carvers, and a lot of the carvers do carving year-round. A lot of them have other jobs year-round, but when the Halloween season comes around, it's time to carve pumpkins. So it's just it's a lot of contestants that have been on the show before. This new season is the All-Star season, so we're all returning contestants. So it's the best of the best creating these giant sculptures and structures and just these large installations of art made of completely pumpkin and edible, like, produce materials.
That is so cool. Is that running right now?
It actually, the finale was this past Sunday, so just a few days ago.
Oh.
So I won't do any spoilers. If you missed it on Food Network, don't worry. You can stream it on HBO Max or Discovery Plus, or I think you can also get it on Prime as well.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look for that because that sounds like fun. What was it like learning how to carve on a pumpkin? I mean, it's like you said, it's not a material you're used to using.
Yeah, it's cold and it's gross and it's messy and I mean, the thing is you can't really put it down and then come back to it 2 days later because it's already started rotting. Once you finish a pumpkin, I don't know if you've ever carved a jack-o'-lantern, but it starts getting shriveled up, you know, within
sure.
the next few days. So so it's something that you gotta do on the spot. I learned mostly off of watching shows like mine. You watch shows like Outrageous Pumpkins or Halloween Wars, but also there's so many kind of video lessons on YouTube and online. And a lot of the artists that I work with also do seminars or do classes that will teach you as well. A big part of getting started is just having the right tools.
That was my next question. What are those tools?
The tools can vary immensely. A lot of it is things you can just find in a kitchen, you know, so a paring knife or a butcher knife or even like a mandolin where you can cut the pieces really thin. And then then you can go on to more intense wood carving tools. So a lot of people will use the scoops that you use to carve spoons, or I know that when I started, the big ones that really kind of changed the way I carved were sculpture tools that you would use to sculpt clay. They're just kind of reinforced, so they're a little bit stronger, and we call them loop tools or ribbon tools. And those are extremely helpful to just take a little bit away at a time to be able to get that kind of 3D effect.
Is that one of the mistakes that amateurs make, is that their tools are so big that they just take big chunks out?
Well, I suppose the big, the biggest mistake an amateur can make is accidentally, you know, chopping your finger off. So
yes, but, that would be a mistake.
But no, I think, I mean, the big thing for me is, as a kid, I never liked knives. I didn't like to, I enjoy cooking, but I don't like chopping. It just wasn't really comfortable. And to make art solely with a knife always seemed really dangerous, especially for children. Mm-hmm. I'm still surprised today that people are giving knives to kids to create these jack-o'-lanterns. So it was a huge relief for me, knowing that there were other options that I believe are a lot less dangerous and a little bit more clean, in my opinion. I rarely gut my pumpkins. Just gutting the pumpkins would solely be so it's easier to carry around. But sometimes if you carve it out, the squirrels are more likely to eat it. So I usually just leave all the guts in there.
Well, and then if you do that, that's probably why they don't last quite as long. Is that right? Then
I guess it varies. I leave the guts in there, but I'm not sure. I guess with more airflow, you get more chance of bacteria getting on the inside of the pumpkin. So I would almost think gutting it would make it rot faster. But I'm not sure. I never really tested it. It might be a good experiment.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you certainly have a lot of pumpkins around right now. So, what about those tools that you can get in the grocery stores or whatever? You know, they're probably under $10. Are those worth buying?
I love them. You'll notice if sometimes watching the show that we'll use those tools too, just because they're specifically made for it. Mm-hmm. But they aren't going to be helpful to the style that I do, just because I do kind of a 3D relief sculpture work into the skin of the pumpkin, while those are more for your cut-throughs and jack-o'-lanterns. But I think those are a perfectly fine thing to buy, especially if you've got a starting artist in your family. It's just always a great thing to support any sort of art that they get their hands on. If they do want to try something a little bit different, you can get most of the tools that I use off Amazon. It's not an extremely expensive hobby, unless you are carving those big Atlantic giants. I mean, those 1,000-pound pumpkins will cost you over $1,000. So that's a whole nother animal.
Have you ever done one of those? We were just talking about giant pumpkins on the first half hour.
I've done three. One in the first season of Outrageous Pumpkins, I made it to the finale, so I got to carve a 1,500-pound pumpkin. And then I got to carve another one this season. And then actually a few weeks ago, I went to Rockford, Illinois, and I was visiting some of my other carving friends, and we all got together and carved another Atlantic giant that was over 1,800 pounds. So, it's a really amazing experience because they've got really thick skin and they're super fun to work with, but a ton of work.
So obviously you've got your pumpkin, you need to create something. You have a fairly short timeline to come up with an idea and then execute it? Or do you maybe during the winter start saying, oh, you know, this will make a great pumpkin carving, so I'm going to write that down and do some sketches? How do you work?
I tend to be kind of a last minute person. I and I don't mean to generalize, but as a woman, I do like to plan ahead. But when it comes to creativity, that's my space. It's my special time. So those aren't things that I like to, that I dwell too much on ahead of time. Once, you know, if you get hit by the creative bug, you got to do it right away, or you're going to lose it. And I think a lot of creatives will agree that when you hit this, when you get inspired by something, you got to do it right away. So, when it comes to pumpkins, it's usually an on the spot decision. I rarely plan things out unless it was the show. Then we really had to plan things out, but yeah.
So what do you carve on your pumpkins? What are some of your favorites?
I personally like just scary faces, lots of teeth, but I also love animals. It's one of my favorite things, so I'll always, I'm really good at cats, or I carve like a bulldog or a pug face, something like that. Those are great faces because their heads are already shaped like pumpkins anyway, so it works out. But yeah, pretty much any animal. I'm thinking this year before Halloween, I might carve a hippopotamus in front of the house, since there's a cute little hippo on social media that's really, really popular these days. So you just kind of go with the trends, but I mean, sometimes you'll just see a pumpkin. You're like, oh, this looks just like this. I have to carve this out of it. You kind of let the medium do the talking.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So do you carve all the way around the pumpkin or just the front? Or how do you do that?
Yeah, it depends on where the pumpkin's going to go. If it's a place that is going to stay pretty stagnant and that people are only going to see the front, you might as well just carve the front. Don't waste your time unless it's, you know, you have a goal to make it all the way around the pumpkin. So you kind of got to think, you know, where is this pumpkin going to sit? But also, what's the design? Is it going to be good for an all around piece? I did a carving of, it was like a rat that was like digging into the pumpkin. Sometimes you'll get a pumpkin that has a big rotten spot in it. You can't really help it. There are definitely some tips and tricks to figure out, you know, if the pumpkin you're picking is the right one or if it's going to be rotten, but sometimes you'll still get a little rotten spot. So I carved a rat kind of clawing into it, but then you have the tail like wrapping all around and things like that. So yeah, it just depends on your design, and you certainly can go all around the pumpkin. There's no one stopping you.
There are no pumpkin police to worry about.
No, I hope not.
So how do you pick out a quality pumpkin?
Well, first you got to think, like, what style do I want to do? So if you want to just do a jack-o'-lantern, any pumpkin that you usually will get that has a nice, smooth, buttery, like, orange outside, you want to pick it up. You know, if it's pretty lightweight, that's good for a jack-o'-lantern because, you know, the skin is pretty thin. You want a nice, smooth outside. If you're looking for something like that, just kind of focus on what looks good to you and what you want to show in your home. If you are looking to do something like what I do, where it's more 3D sculpture work, you want to kind of pick the pumpkin up. If it feels heavier than it looks, it might be a good one. You also want to make sure that the skin is soft. You don't want to go, some pumpkins have darker skin or like textured skin, and sometimes those can be really hard to cut into. You might need power tools. Also, take a look at the stem. If it's got a really cool twirly stem, that's a really great thing for a decoration at your house. But also, if the stem is yellow or if the stem feels soft, there's a good chance that there might be moisture inside the pumpkin and that there might be a little bit of rot in there. You want to feel around if there's any soft spots. You want to make sure the bottom doesn't have any soft spots, things like that. Actually, on the show, Titus and I, we ended up picking out some rotten pumpkins, which was too bad.
Oh, what a shame. We're talking to Carly Ide. She's an illustrator, a pumpkin and tattoo artist, and she's based in Appleton. We'd love to hear from you if you've got any questions for her. Did you see her on the Food Network? What'd you think? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email, and that's talk@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Stay with us because at noon, we're going to be talking about the science of learning a new language, and it doesn't matter your age. But right now, we're talking about pumpkin carving. Do you have any questions? Do you have any ways that you like to carve your pumpkin? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or like I said, you can always send an email, and that's talk at WPR.org. So have you in the past, put your light inside of a pumpkin, so carved it out and whatnot. When you do your, I know I've seen a lot of carvings where they take that light into consideration, but you don't do pumpkins like that?
It really depends. The great thing is during the Halloween season, it's all about things looking creepy and scary and kind of ugly. So I don't ever shy away from any instances. And people ask me all the time, do you make mistakes when you're carving pumpkins? Yes, absolutely, all the time. But that's the beauty of Halloween. And sometimes you'll end up with a hole straight through your pumpkin and you're like, well, I guess it's a jack-o'-lantern now. just got to think on your feet. It's always a good idea to put those lights in the pumpkins, especially if you're inviting trick-or-treaters over. You know, you want them to know that it's a safe space. I love a jack-o'-lantern. And on the show, they do emphasize placement of lights quite often as well. So it's all a big part of it. I don't usually stray too far away from tradition.
So when you do that, we've traditionally always carved the top open, you know, and then put the light inside. But lately I've been noticing that people are opening in the bottom and then putting them over a light. Have you tried that?
Yeah, we have done that. I think that's a great option. It makes it a little bit easier. You can kind of dictate a little bit more where the light is. Also, it might end up being a little less dangerous depending on what kind of light you're putting inside. I suppose if you really were going to try the tradition and put an actual candle in there, it might be more dangerous if it's sitting on the base of the pumpkin. You know, you don't want anything to start on fire, but I'm not quite sure how that works. But I think the only reason I wouldn't do that is the worry that any of like the pumpkin kind of moisture would get onto, you know, the concrete. And I'm not actually quite sure how easy that is to get off your front stoop. So I guess it really depends on your aesthetic. If you want that nice round bottom, maybe just put it in through the top. Some people will put the light in through the mouth too, if you make the mouth big enough. Also, a lot of carvers will put the light in through the back as well. So it's really your aesthetic. And I've also seen, it's really cool actually, where someone will carve into their pumpkin in the front, but they will do no cut-throughs. They'll only carve lightly through the skin so that it just takes away a little bit of the skin so you can see the image, but it's not completely cut through. But then they'll put a fully cut-through image in the back, and then they'll put the light in the center. That way the light will project the image that you carved in through the back on the wall behind the pumpkin. I hope that makes sense. It's hard to kind of explain it. But there's really a lot of tricks that you can do with lighting. Mm-hmm. And you can have an effect from the front, but have the light show through the back. It's kind of neat. I'm constantly inspired just seeing kind of just normal people do cool carvings online.
Yeah, it is amazing. And people just really go all out. For those who've never carved, but have, you know, done the traditional triangle eyes and what have you, what is the first step? Do you actually peel the pumpkin before you carve it?
Yeah, so the first thing we'll do is take, we have multiple tools. You can use like a produce peeler. You can also use a rasp. It's something that, or a SureForm. It's something that you use for drywall. There's a few different tools you can use, but first we take the skin off just to give us a nice clean canvas. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we just slowly kind of build out the planes of the face and the depth and things like that. But yeah, you always kind of want to start by taking that skin off. And also you can do that in a very mindful way in case maybe the shape of the face is a big part of your carve. Last year I did Jack Nicholson from The Shining when he's like poking through the door frame mm-hmm. saying, "Here's Johnny." But then the way I took away the skin on the face was just in the shape of that kind of hole in the door. That way I knew that the face would only go through in this area, but it'll still kind of have that breaking effect on the outside. So even just the shape that you take the skin away will be helpful for your piece of artwork.
What about the, you know, they've got like stencils and things like that that you can use. What are your thoughts on those?
Stencils are great. Honestly, I can't even think of a single way to carve your pumpkin that I wouldn't support just because I love Halloween and I just love to see people get creative and do fun Halloween things. And you will be hard pressed to find anyone in the pumpkin carving community that is a gatekeeper. We all just want to see people get creative and have fun. So you talk to any of us on Outrageous Pumpkins and we're just really excited to see people creating and getting inspired by what we're doing. There's no shame in the stencil game for sure. A lot of people will put the stencil over and they'll kind of like poke through with a pencil just so that they have the stencil kind of imprinted on the pumpkin and then they can take the stencil away. But another option, and which is really funny because it goes along with my full-time job, I'm actually a tattoo artist full-time. But another option a lot of people from home are doing is they're buying tattoo stencil paper and they're putting their stencil on that and then they're imprinting the stencil on the pumpkin that way, which is a really, really helpful option as well. And it tends to work for a lot of people. So stencils are a great option.
Tell us a little bit more about Outrageous Pumpkins, the show. What was it like on the set?
Well, the first time I was on the set, I was completely out of my league. I just felt really overwhelmed because I had only been a sculptor, but the show is very much about building structures and creating these large statues of pumpkins. So I kind of had to learn everything all at once during that first season. But in this new season, we're on teams. So they put me on a team with a guy named Titus, who is really, really well-versed in building, and he's an amazing structure builder and just very clever on how he puts things together. And so we really made an awesome team where I could kind of do the creative carving aspect, and he was able to kind of build it and put it together and add just an amazing like humor to everything that we did. But all the teams this year are perfectly put together. This may not be fun for some people, but there was no fighting. There was this just not the community we're in. It's just not a lot of drama. It's pumpkins. We understand it's going to rot in a few weeks. So we just want to make the best thing we can make and have people love it as much as we do. So it was a great show to be a part of.
What was your favorite pumpkin? Yours or someone else's?
Well, I know I there's a million of the other ones that I really, really like, but for Titus and I, we put together it was the Battling Beasts episode, which is I think episode 3 in this new season. And we made this bulldog where it was like the face of a bulldog and the body, but the body of a bull, and it was like kind of bucking, and then it was being attacked by a horse fly, so it was like half horse, half fly. It was, we really had fun this season. It was just constant laughing, and I love Halloween, I love horror movies, but when it comes to my artwork and things, I like to go more funny. And Titus, who has children, he didn't want to scare his kids too much watching the show. So we really worked together to create these masterpieces without making them too scary. And it tickled us the whole time. We were just having the time of our life.
So were there prizes involved with the competition?
Yes. So the winners receive $50,000 so that they split between the team. And then they also receive the coveted pumpkin carving belt, which has become kind of an inside joke, but at the same time, like, it's not ironically coveted by us. We always kind of, we make fun of it a little bit, but at the same time, everybody wants their hands on that belt.
So, sure, sure.
So it looks like a big wrestling belt. It's hilarious.
That's the version I got.
It's not
going
to help anyone hold up their pants. No.
Well, that's not the point.
No.
So is it sort of similar like other like competition shows where someone gets eliminated every week?
Yes. Exactly. Okay. So this season it started with 7 teams, and then so people just kept getting knocked off. And then by the time the finale rolled around, there were 4 teams
left. Okay. Okay. Sounds great.
So there's plenty of art to look at on all the episodes.
Well, Carly, this has been so much fun. We really appreciate you sharing this, and hopefully people go find the Outrageous Pumpkins and watch it. Thank you.
I hope so. Yeah, thanks.
Our guest has been Carly Ide. She's an illustrator, pumpkin, and tattoo artist based out of Appleton. Stay with us because at noon, we're going to be talking about learning a new language. So stay with us. If you have a question about that, give us a call, 800-642-1234.
Shapes all over the place. It's Halloween, and we made so much happen on a pumpkin fest.